Denise Riley presiding. Now calling the case of In Re Welfare of Children of DMA, A20-16-19.
Thank you. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This session is being recorded, and so at the beginning of your argument, please state your name for the record. You'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal if appellant chooses to use that. So with that, is the appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Walker, attorney for appellant DMA. This case has an odd history, and well, it's laid out pretty thoroughly in the brief. Essentially, there are a few issues that I strongly believe in this particular case. Under the underlying CHIPS action, the case wasn't even adjudicated in the CHIPS case before the termination of the parental rights was filed. They were filed 30 days apart. And then my client had to wait full year after the filing of the termination case to have a trial on that termination case, the previous one. And at that time, my client appellant was working on an involuntary case plan because she wanted to desperately get her children back, and she believed that she needed to comply and do everything necessary to get her children back. Unfortunately, at the time, the county did not agree. Even it was a short window. Everything she was doing was voluntary, and she was allowing access to the house, and she was going to all of her supervised visitation. She was going to treatment. And time came at the trial, and essentially the county's argument was they did not believe that she had the sufficient skills to keep her children safe. And the county was not successful in that trial. And then my client needed to have an opportunity to work her case plan to show that she has those skills that were necessary for her to keep her children safe. And I think there are some facts that really need to take point here is that...
Ms. Walker, before you do that, just preliminarily, I appreciate their initial comments. I just wanted to clarify, is it your client's position that the factual findings by the judge were erroneous, or is it that accepting those facts as a matter of abuse of discretion, the law did not support the two bases for termination?
So I'm going to argue both, Your Honor. We do not believe, especially in the second termination case, that reasonable efforts were put forward by the county. And the other piece that I'm going to argue is I do not believe the facts that were used, they're not clearly erroneous, but I do not believe they are sufficient to reach the level of terminating somebody's parental rights. And again, what's important, what I was saying before, Your Honors, is that, again, the decision to terminate was made within a month of the original termination petition being failing.
So, Ms. Walker, I'm going to follow up with your response to Judge Sleater's question. I'm looking at the way that you framed your legal issue in your brief. And you said the trial court erred in ordering the termination of appellant's parental rights under circumstances where she had a bonded relationship with her children, had never harmed or injured the children, and was engaged in her case plan. So when I see that, I don't see that you appealed whether or not the county made reasonable efforts.
Okay.
Can you point me to your argument where you do argue that?
Yes, I am. Just one moment, Your Honor. I am paging through my brief. I believe I'm not seeing where it's titled right now, but I did start arguing that on page 8 of the brief.
And whereabouts on page 8? I'm there right now.
Okay. Where I start discussing that in a termination proceeding, the county must demonstrate, that's the very bottom.
See that. Okay, thank you. So then my follow-up question is, what do you think the county should have done differently?
Quite honestly, the county did not provide my client with the support necessary that was reasonable for those circumstances.
So I want specifics, please.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. For instance, there was a car that my client had that was taken by Christopher Nelson, who is the biological father of the children who already had his rights terminated. She could get no help getting that car returned to her because it was in both parties' names. But she needed a vehicle. She needed transportation, and she has been paying for it. So she couldn't get help from the police. She could get help from anybody. They could have aided her in getting that car returned to her, but they didn't. And so she was left to her own devices to get that car back. And then that communication is what instituted the text messaging, started the text messaging back and forth. And
there were 800 text messages.
Yes.
It wasn't the 5 or 6 that you referenced in your brief. And most of those text messages didn't seem to talk about the car.
She had contacted him to try to get the car back, and then he was relentless in communicating with her.
Well, and she responded to him.
Yes, she did. She was trying to work with him to see if she was nice to him, maybe she could get the car back, until he threatened to show up at her home. That's when she called the police.
And so what were some of the other services that you believe or think the county should have offered your client to make reasonable efforts?
Yes, they did not offer her continued therapy. They did not inquire as to her domestic violence training. They did not aid her in gas vouchers or anything like that. They did not provide her with, their approach to her was always very antagonistic, and I think without cause. And that is the county's job. And in fact, my, go ahead, Your Honor, I can see that you were going to ask me a question.
So I was looking at the bottom of page 8 on reasonable efforts over to the top of page 9.
Yes.
And that's your paragraph. Your argument, I don't see any of these facts that you're talking about now in that, in your brief.
The crux of my argument, Your Honor, is both was the reasonable efforts, but my major argument was the facts in which the court used for the termination. That's the crux of my argument, that it, what happened, her communicating to get a car back, was not sufficient to file for termination. And they had told her they were going to terminate. There's a body of evidence. They had told her they were going to terminate. And that's in my facts section as well. Within
my understanding is that the judge did terminate by default the father in January, but said that your client didn't terminate as to your client. This is the first TPR trial, and said that they could work, she could work towards reunification. Within, so that was January. February, the guardian ad litem and social worker go over to make sure her home is safe for the children. And my understanding with regard to the father, that there were allegations of not only physical abuse, but sexual abuse of all three of the girls. And that she had put a picture of him over their beds where they were going to be sleeping in her house. And so that is very disturbing to me and shows that your client had a long ways to go to understand the trauma that these children had endured while in her care.
Yes, Your Honor, if you would like me to address that fact because you find it disturbing. That picture existed prior to the first TPR hearing.
But don't you think she would have taken it down knowing that a judge had terminated his rights?
She had, it was a collage of pictures that she had forgotten that he was even a part of it. It wasn't a picture of him. In fact, the county didn't even have an example of what the picture was. And as soon as the county said, perhaps you should take that picture down, she did. And that wasn't the basis in the TPR. So, I mean, she responded appropriately when somebody pointed out, oh, hey, there's a picture of him there, take that down. She was like, oh, you were right. There were no other pictures throughout the rest of the house of him or participating or anything like that. It was a picture, and she responded appropriately.
And then there's a phone call from child A recorded where she more or less asked the child to lie so that she could the other children back.
That's what was not part of this trial, Your Honor. I mean, I find it disturbing, but that was already litigated in the first TPR. That issue was resolved then. And it was a criminal, that was the piece where there was a criminal piece, and that was the reason for the delay. And again, that was taken care of as well, where a plea agreement was signed because she fully cooperated with the county. I don't want to retry the first trial because we won that one. And that was part of that first trial.
Ms. Walker, it seems though that the pattern, if I understand the judge's order, the condition, it seems like the primary condition that the judge concluded had not been, had not changed to the benefit of the family unit, despite reasonable efforts, was the failure to protect the children, perhaps and or herself, all part of the scenario. And the phone calls that Judge Riley's referring to seem like a major part of it, but then also towards the end of the spring into the summer, the relationship with a individual who has a history of domestic abuse. So am I right in paraphrasing that the conclusions of the judge is that condition, despite the therapy she had gone to and the counseling sessions, that she had not learned from it?
I believe that is the judge's position, Your Honor, and I believe that that's not an appropriate factual finding if you look at the entirety of the case record. And first of all, the children were never exposed to Mr. Nelson. That never happened. She was trying to get a car back. Second, and she called 911 on him, even though she knew it might harm her case because she was terrified and didn't want him around. As far as Mr. Payne, the gentleman who she was living with, she had already, termination papers had already been filed. There was a long history of an antagonistic relationship. She was willing to do the background check and continue to work with the county. They weren't willing to work with her. They wanted to do a background check, but they already said, we filed for termination on you. And for the second time. And she didn't, her argument, quite frankly, is she has had a difficult past. He has had a difficult past. And, you know, he did his time, put in his time. So did she. And he has children that he has custody of now. And that didn't seem to be an issue. The issue was simply that she didn't want to cooperate anymore because it's been an over 2-year long case. She would if her children were coming home. They weren't coming home. She was barely allowed to see them. So she said, if my children are coming home, then yes, let's do that. But that never came to fruition. Did that answer your question, Your Honor?
Thank you.
Ms. Walker, I have a question about the standard of review here, because it seems like most of the challenges or the errors that you're pointing out to us on both reasonable efforts, but as well as determination, it seems like most of the errors you're pointing out are findings that you disagree with. You're challenging the findings in light of evidence that you think is in the record. You are actually bringing a fact-based challenge and not so much one that is primarily an abuse of discretion. What do you think the appropriate standard of review here is?
I believe the standard of review should be Well, the lower court is given a lot of deference. There's substantial evidence within the record to show that my client is not a continuing ongoing danger to the child. And I believe it was a clearly erroneous finding. And that is the majority of my record. It is mostly fact-based, and that the appellate court does have the ability to review the facts and to review the case. And as I mentioned, I don't want to get stuck in the fact that in the previous case, that one was successful. It was how quickly this one was done, and it was based upon, number one, an incident that didn't even exist when the TPR was filed, and number two, for short 3 days worth of communications.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to start by giving you a little bit of history into how this case came into the courts in the first place. There was a domestic assault that happened in the city of Detroit Lakes, wherein Ms. Anderson took one child and ran from the house and left two of her children behind in the house with Mr. Nelson, who had just assaulted her. The result of leaving those children behind and failing to protect them is that one of the children was thrown over a banister and suffered from broken ribs. Ms. Anderson repeatedly, the children were removed at that point because she was unable to protect them from Mr. Nelson. Ms. Anderson continually said she could not move from that house because she did not have the resources, so she continued to live there with Mr. Nelson, even though her children were removed due to his actions. Subsequently, she was evicted from that house in Detroit Lakes and was able to find an apartment in a nearby town of Frazee. So she therein moved to this apartment in Frazee, once again, along with Mr. Nelson. She continued to live with him for months after her children were removed. It was not until, I believe, December of that year that she, and the incident happened in July. It wasn't until December of that year that she determined that Mr. Nelson should leave her home. Part of this goes back to the prior CHIPS action and the prior TPR order, although Ms. Walker didn't want to relitigate that since she was successful in that one. But I think it is important that all of the previous cases were incorporated into this rather abbreviated court trial for the second termination. As Ms. Walker stated, this did have to do with, it came to light based on Ms. Anderson trying to retrieve a car. However, the county could not offer support in retrieving that car. The law enforcement could not offer help in retrieving that car because it was a car that was in joint ownership. Mr. Nelson had as much right to that vehicle as Ms. Anderson did. Furthermore, she was not left without transportation. She had another car that she had been using. This is more of a case where Ms. Anderson did not want to pay for the car that Mr. Nelson was driving, which is understandable, but anybody that has gone through a divorce understands how things are not always fair. But being that the car was titled in both of their names, they were both entitled to it. Ms. Walker said that Ms. Anderson voluntarily worked her case plan, and she did do some of those things voluntarily. The trouble with voluntarily working your case plan without the CHIPS adjudication, because Ms. Anderson would not admit that the environment with Mr. Nelson that started this was injurious to the children, even though her eldest daughter received broken ribs. Therefore, there wasn't an adjudication until the TPR trial. Much of the assessments and therapies that Becker County Human Services offers to families in these types of situations, the main assessment is based on self-reporting, and it is vital that they work with Human Services so that collateral information can get to the assessor so that they can see the whole picture as to why the county is concerned about the well-being of the children in Ms. Anderson's care. They were unable to get information from some of the therapy and services that she was working voluntarily to see how that was going, to see if there were additional supports, because Ms. Anderson just wanted to do everything on her own without the county's involvement.
Ms. Tufts, yes. Could I inquire? The judge had added a footnote on page 10 of the order making reference to, I wish more time would have been allowed by Human Services for her to work on her case plan. It strikes me that somewhat at least supports the point Ms. Walker's making on behalf of her client that they weren't giving her a full effort. And I think in the brief, she even used the phrase bias, perhaps against her client. Can you tell me, and I can't tell from the rest of the order what the judge was referring to, but obviously it was on the judge's mind that perhaps Human Services should allow more time to work the case plan.
Okay, Your Honor, the original TPR and adjudication was granted, I believe, in December of 2019, when the case began in 2018. The judge's order came out in December, and the Human Services were working with reunification efforts. As a matter of fact, they were almost ready to return the children for a trial home visit. That's when they went to the home and found pictures of Mr. Nelson in the bedroom, and they didn't think that was appropriate, so Ms. Anderson did remove them. Shortly after that, that's when the text messages came to light that Ms. Anderson was continually communicating with Mr. Nelson, although part of her case plan was clearly have no contact with Mr. Nelson. And so they were working reunification efforts, and we were hopeful that the children would be returned to her. But then came to light the text messages, to which she was dishonest in the amount of text messages. When she first met up with law enforcement after Mr. Nelson threatened to come to the home, she said she didn't know whose number it was. She didn't know who it was. This is the first time they've had contact. It wasn't until they were looking for violations of the order for protection for Mr. Nelson's case that it came to light that they had been communicating for days.
Now, but Ms. Tufts, just to clarify, though, since this is in the judge's order following the TPR, I assume, in essence, knowing all that, the judge still thought the county was a bit premature in filing the termination petition. Would that be an accurate understanding of that footnote?
It would not, Your Honor. The way the text messages happened in February, and so Becker County Human Services kind of pulled back on the trial home visit to kind of see what was going on. Shortly thereafter, they continued visitations with the children and Ms. Anderson. They then went out to do another home visit where they realized that there was a man living in the home. And they asked who that man was, and Ms. Anderson refused to identify him. And that was in May, I believe. Within a two-month period, Ms. Anderson had struck up this relationship with a man and had him move into her home. She refused to cooperate to do a background search to see if the children could safely be returned to the home with that man in there. They would not give Human Services the name of this individual. And the individual, Mr. Payne, testified at trial that he would have, but he didn't think it was necessary because they have all his background information, because he had recently been released from prison and had been in some in custody doing some anger management work for his 2019 assault case. So they were unable to work toward that trial home visit, not knowing who was in the home. And then once they finally learned who was in the home, obviously it was just prior to trial, we got the name of the individual and we did the background search on that. And we found out that he has a assaultive history and prior TPRs. So it is likely if Ms. Anderson and Mr. Payne had discussed that, they decided not to tell Human Services because they knew that Human Services would not approve him being in the home with the children. In her therapy that Ms. Anderson was receiving, at the first TPR trial, she was testifying that she understood the cycle of domestic violence. She understood safety planning. She understood how to identify unsafe people by doing background searches. And I think that is one of the reasons that the first TPR trial did not terminate her parental rights, because she said on the stand that she understood those things and they were going to try to work towards reunification. But the fact of the matter is, her idea of a background search was basically a Google search. We asked her at trial, what kind of a background search did she do on this individual? She said she didn't see anything concerning. She also testified that all of those assaultive cases were old, when in reality, they were not. They were 1 year old, and he had just gotten out of his criminal penalties on that when they struck up this relationship. Ms. Anderson testified that he had never met the children. She had never introduced him to the children. Therefore, the children weren't in harm. But Ms. Anderson had got a marriage license prior to introducing him to the children and had every intention of marrying this man with this assaultive background prior to introducing him to the children. And that in itself is a frightening indicator that she has a failure to protect these children, thinking that she could invite a man with that type of a background without any support or services and appropriately parent to her children. She just does not seem to understand or grasp the significance of the trauma that these children have been through.
Ms. Tufts, yes. I'm curious what you think. Do you agree that the standard of review is really clear error here, because the errors that are being identified are mostly or seem to be many of them factual as opposed to discretion?
I think that Ms. Walker did think that they were clearly erroneous, and I do not believe they are clearly erroneous. There was a lot of, this case had been going on for over 2 years, and the judge was very aware. And in order to be clearly erroneous, the facts have to be undisputably, the judge read them wrong. And in this case, they did not. I will admit this is somewhat of a borderline case, and it would come down to the judge's discretion and how the facts have presented themselves. But I do believe that the threatened harm, somebody with a previous TPR and whatnot would have a maltreatment determination, and there's a threatened harm to these children, and Ms. Anderson just clearly does not seem to recognize that. And I do believe that the judge found the facts appropriately, that despite 2 years of services, Ms. Anderson is just not capable of putting her children first. The capacity to parent suggested that she would put a relationship ahead of the well-being of the children. She did that with Mr. Nelson by continuing to live with him even after the children were removed and moving with him to a new location. And then she goes ahead and shows it once again by engaging in a relationship with Mr. Payne, who has a similar history to Mr. Nelson. She just doesn't seem to be able to parent on her own. And she chooses unhealthy partners to attempt in supporting her parent-child relationship. It is in the best interest of the children that the parental rights of Ms. Anderson be terminated. They have been in a supported foster home for the past going on 3 years now. And they are doing well. They are engaged in the community. They are healthy. And they are not witnessing any more violence in their short lives. I would cede the rest of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Walker, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. You're muted.
There we go. I always forget that piece. Sorry about that. I would like to address a few issues brought up by Ms. Tufts, and one of them is the level of trauma the children have faced. One of the elements that the county did not bring up was the children's trauma. I mean, or did not have facts to substantiate was the children's trauma. They were talking about how they were traumatized. They were talking about how the children were going to therapy. And in fact, they even talked about how my client joined the children in therapy, and that went really well. Child two had more issues given the age of that child, but there is nothing to suggest that that therapy wasn't going well. And there's nothing to suggest that my client did not understand that they were traumatized. And again, it sounded like even hearing Ms. Tufts that Mr. Payne was on trial and not my client, which is unfortunate. And if we also look at the record, it was the previous record when my client left and moved into a different place. It was Mr. Nelson following her. It wasn't until she got an OFP to get him out. She was terrified of him, physically terrified of him. He wasn't even on the leash. He just came along. So that was problematic. Then also, I believe in the second trial, I think it was problematic to use Dr. Dahlin in there and to report and her expert testimony. And there are objections in the record of both, because it had been well over 2 years since Dr. Dahlin had even talked to my client, and she was making extrapolations on.
Ms. Walker, if I can jump in, are you now arguing that there was an error in the decision that the district court made to admit evidence?
Yes. And that is in the findings, and that is in my brief as well, that Dr. Dahlin's report should not have been considered. And then as far as my client deciding to do her work on her own through her own therapist, there's nothing that is wrong with it. The county had signed releases to have access to all of the information and to talk with her therapist. That was all provided to the county. My client was very cooperative with that. So it wasn't like they couldn't talk to the providers. It was just providers that my client felt easier to work with. Then the county had also, when Ms. Tufts was saying that they were, that the guardian ad litem and the social worker were going to in May to my client's home to see the safety of the home, they'd already told my client they were terminating her parental rights. They in no way indicated that there was any chance those children were potentially coming home. That wasn't, and my client's frustration was the county's constant blaming of her. And she made the decision at that point in time that if they're going to take her children away, why in the world would they have a trial home visit and then also want to do a background check on someone when they've already made the decision to terminate and told her so? And in fact, it was in one of the court reports that they had on January 14th to February 26th. On February 26th is the date that they had a meeting between the social workers, the team meeting, and they decided to terminate my client's rights. And they told that to my client. It was so quick. And it wasn't based upon the fact that she had this other man in her home. It was based, that was bad. That was in May. And to blame it on that is just ridiculous. But had they really wanted to cooperate with my client, had they really wanted to help her get her children back home, they would have said, well, let us do a background check, work with you so we can still try to get your child back home. That's not what they said. And so my client did not have the impression that allowing them to go through his history was going to be advantageous at all. I have nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Judge Slater. Judge Bryan, do you have any more questions for Ms. Walker? Seeing none, thank you for your arguments. The case is now submitted and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time. And that concludes the oral part of our calendar.